from LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Okay, tell me your name and what do you do?
Elliot.
Smith, I play music.
I'm Sean Cannon from Louisville Public Media and The Guest List. It's the first edition of Say Yes, an Elliot Smith podcast. 20 years ago, Kill Rock Stars released Elliot's landmark record, Either Or, which, in the minds of most folks, is his most important. And over the next 6 weeks, we're going to celebrate that anniversary in a lot of different ways. Now, if you're wondering exactly what that looks like, well, so am I. You know, I had a very specific plan for what I thought this would be when I started, but as I gathered audio, I realized I was just going to have to throw it out the window. Now, what that means is there's no narrative arc or format for the series. So sometimes you'll hear stories from folks who knew Elliot. Sometimes you'll hear in-depth conversations about Either Or and the songs on it. Sometimes we'll talk about pivotal moments in his career, and then sometimes you'll just get to find out what makes his music mean something to different people. Now, with that in mind, I figured the best place to start would be where I actually started, my first interview for this project, because it gives a pretty good overview of what made Elliot's music so special and what made him so special as a musician. That interview was with musician Kevin Devine, who almost met Elliot Smith once before deciding against completely embarrassing himself in the end.
I'm looking at you through a wine glass.
My relationship to what I thought of, I never met him. I was in a hallway with him once at a show he played in Jersey, and I was drunk and high, and I saw him, and I was kind of like, how do you go up to someone and say everything I think about this guy and his music and not sound crazy? Particularly when, you know, this was right before he passed, 6 months before he passed. I didn't feel like the appropriate time to go up and harangue him with my intense passion for his work or whatever, and his transformative impact on my life. But I think Elliot, as a person, I don't know him. I've gotten close with some people who did, and I've, you know, there was different Elliots. But his impact on me as a person was certainly, he seems to carry himself with a certain air of, I'm not talking about the depressiveness or whatever else. Just, he seems to just kind of be into his work and, for all of the feeling and that, yes, that down to the bone thing, but it's also just, it's such tasteful, thoughtful music. It evokes a feeling, all those chord progressions, all those tone choices, all of the, beyond the lyrics, beyond his voice, beyond, but also he never sacrificed craft for feeling. It was not like messy music. It was not like histrionic music. And I think that in some way mirrored his externalization as a person. Musically speaking, I just don't think there's been a sophisticated and nuanced songwriter, rock songwriter or whatever, in the past 25 years, 30 years. I mean, I don't know. I think he was like a generational talent. And I think that it gets obscured somewhat by the story, particularly the ending. But if you sit there with his music, it's particularly once he's able to, like, from Either Or on, once he has, like, songs are always there, but once he has the, like, confidence and playing field to express himself arrangement-wise. And, you know, it's kind of crazy if you step back and listen to those records and realize, like, 90% of what you're hearing is one person. Which also is maybe was too much. I don't know. That could be, like, a David Foster Wallace thing or something. He might have just... too much happening up there, too much current going through.
You walk down the line.
You know, in talking to so many different musicians who spent years drawing inspiration from and dissecting Elliott's music, there's one word in particular that kept coming to mind. It might seem obvious if you're a fan, but as a songwriter, this one word definitely can't be underestimated.
Subtlety. Yeah, just being mindful of not always using the hammer. Lyrically, obviously that might sound like a weird thing with his music because of its tonality. It was often he's thought of as being like a whispery, but by the way, that's like not true of half to more of his recorded output. But I'm also talking like thematically, linguistically, approach-wise. The feeling always developed, the picture always developed, but he didn't beat you over the head to get there. And he left you with some work to do too. And I think I'd really prefer that to listening to somebody's journal or whatever. So, quite frankly, I think he's like the best songwriter since the first crop of best songwriters. He's like the guy that I go to more than anybody else. I think of Elliott Smith the way I think of, Leonard Cohen or Dylan or the Beatles.
In Kevin's mind, it's like Elliott was on this mission to combine the best parts of all of the Beatles and Brian Wilson.
And the thing that's insane is that he kind of did it. You listen to some of the songs, it's got like John Lennon's attitude, Paul McCartney's melodic sensibility, George Harrison's tastefulness and tonality as a lead guitar player, and then he's got these like psychedelic flourishes and walls of harmonies that are very Beach Boys reminiscent, but content-wise, lyrically, indebted to things that I guess are a bit darker than any of that, but with a kind of poetry that's indebted to those guys I just mentioned. Look at the spin sheet, battered and broken, pitching a plastic rose. We're all in the downpour you carry around for trashing a lifestyle you've never known. He filtered so much brilliant stuff that came before and then put his own, completely his own sensibility around it, which is like the hardest thing there is to do. It's really hard to like bear the responsibility of the Church of Song and then kind of in the process turn yourself into one of its main proponents is what everybody's trying to do. And he kind of like wrote classic sounding music that became classic.
I know that might sound a little hyperbolic, but Kevin Devine also shared a story that I think illustrates just how talented and dedicated to his craft Elliott Smith was. It originally came from Rob Schnapf, who produced albums with both Elliott and Kevin.
He got Elliott into a bunch of like Hank Williams, or Elliott was listening to a bunch of that stuff, and Rob gave him some like, I don't remember if it was like Lightning Hopkins or something like that. And then there's some B-sides from that time from either or, one called I Don't Think I'm Ever Gonna Figure It Out, that is like super fast, nimble, spider walking, right hand, five finger stuff, like finger picking. All these crazy pull-off, hammer-on lead things, guitar nerd stuff that was Elliott playing this music, this country music, this blues music. The tired heads have fallen below. I can't connect, yeah, I know. Rob was like, oh, okay. So, like, he can kind of do anything. And that was like, I feel like they were started kind of included, like, give him little tests in the studio. He talks about it in that movie at one point about Tomorrow, Mexico, just giving him like restringing a 12-string guitar with all the high strings and like just leaving it around and knowing Elliott would like pick it up and be like, oh, what's going on here? And it would be like, let's see what he does. And then he'd like write a perfect song because that's what he did for 5 years, kind of every time he wrote one. Everybody knows which way you go.
straight till over. No one wants to see you inside of me.
Yeah, it's all, he was, I mean, that a generational talent. It's lucky we got him for as long as we did. And more, that's the thing, as I grow up 37, as I grow up, I react less to the lyricism or the sadness or whatever is less interesting to me than like the economy of language, the mastery of words, the feeling that's evoked in the choices he made musically. The sadness becomes something that I almost, it's funny, that might have been the thing that was like most attractive to me when I was a kid, that it was such sophisticated music, but he was every bit as like grappling with his emotional landscape as like one of these louder, these emo bands I was listening to at the time, or like, you know, Nirvana or something like that. But in, you know, in such a more kind of what felt so much more adult, the context musically. And now I kind of wish he had had more time to get to someplace different, as a content writer lyrically, if that makes sense. Like not just be in the dark place all the time. Because if there is anything about his music that is like vaguely samey, and that's the highest criticism I could offer his music, because I seriously think it's like a 10 out of 10. But if there was something I had to look at now, it's that he was kind of, there is so much about, so much from that place, that perspective lyrically. But how, of course, there was, that's where he was. And I just, you know, I would have loved to have heard what happened had he been able to go somewhere else.
People of a certain age talk about Elliott Smith's inclusion in the Good Will Hunting soundtrack as kind of their touchstone, or maybe their entry point into his music. But if you're just a few years younger, there's a good chance you found out about him thanks to a very different film. Just like Sadie Dupuis, the vocalist and guitarist for Speedy Ortiz in Sad 13.
I went to see the Royal Tenenbaums with my dad, and he got the CD soundtrack, which I stole from him. And I'm struggling to remember what song is on. It's Needle in the Hay and like the Luke Wilson attempted suicide scene. And I was like maybe 12 when that movie came out. And I think just starting to grapple with like, you know, teenage borderline adult feelings for the first time, and it was very impactful for me. And it was right around the time that I was first learning guitar and writing songs, and I think getting into Elliott Smith and writing songs were sort of cross wires for me. I mean, I was so young that I like named my guitar and I named it Elliott, and so yeah, that was sort of my, when I got into him, I guess 2001.
Now on the bus, nearly touching this dirty retreat. Falling out, six in pallet, dead, sweating my teeth. Gonna walk, 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 four more blocks, plus the one in my brain. Down, downstairs.
Something that's very attractive about Elliott Smith's music for many people is how just like brutally honest it is. Sometimes it's almost painful to listen to. It's so straightforward about just like sometimes feeling, you know, that life is totally futile. So certainly as like a, you know, I was 13, 14 when I first started listening to his music, and it's probably the first time I realized that I did cope with depression. So it very much spoke to me in that way. But as I've gotten older, I think my lyrical sensibilities are maybe, I lean a bit more towards like the obtuse than some of what Elliot was writing, but just the, like, really the chord progressions and the melodies have always sort of stuck to me as, like, the... He just does a lot of cool things within a song. A lot of things that are unexpected or that might not... You might not notice are a bit strange structurally until you try to play them yourself. And I think that's always sort of the goal for me in writing a song is to make something that sounds like it's really pretty straightforward, but actually has a lot going on. And I think Elliott Smith was certainly one of the best songwriters at doing that kind of thing.
That said, Sadie's love for Elliott Smith doesn't just apply to his solo work. She's also a big fan of his band Heat Miser, which released their last record, Mike City Sons, a year before Elliott released Either Or.
I got into them later, but I kind of view them as like the ultimate, one of the ultimate rock bands. I remember like visiting my grandparents in Florida, and I had like Mike City Sons on my Discman, and I was like listening to it and getting really into it and going on a walk through like some strange forest, and I got totally lost because I was so into just like listening to it, and I had to go to like a local library and call them the Yellow Pages because I got so distracted listening to Heat Miser that I got lost in Florida.
You know, oftentimes Elliott's old band Heat Miser gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. But for Sadie Dupuis, really, its importance can't be overstated, especially when it comes to what she does with her band, Speedy Ortiz.
Like, we're always using Heat Miser as a reference for how we want something to sound mixed or what the guitars should do with one another or how, like, you know, a counter melody should work. I think, like, in that band especially, we're probably looking more towards Heat Miser or some of the louder Elliott Smith stuff.
Now, I might be imagining things, but I really do think you can hear that in the music.
Better yet, better yet. Jealous of what didn't get your name. Better you, fake the truth. I tried to buy an aluminum toy from the booth outside the dojo with a 10-buck coin from your old drawer.
Sadie also hit on a really interesting aspect of Elliott's work that might be easy to overlook because of how effortlessly he seemed to do it. But it's something that came up a few times in a handful of conversations I had for this.
I love thinking about the geography of Elliott Smith's songs, and I think he inserts his location into music in a way that is tasteful to me. Like, sometimes when people are, like, shouting out across street in New York, I kind of have to roll my eyes. Like, I don't care that you're in Greenpoint. But I think he's very good at evoking location in a way that isn't cringy. High Times, he talks about, like, meeting someone in Central Square. And I remember being in college at MIT and, like, walking to Central Square and listening to that song and just, like, thinking it was cool that I'd been in the same place that he'd been, you know, playing music and writing. I went to meet you at Central Square, and I couldn't find you there. I went walking around the city some more, people watching with a cold blank stare. And I saw your face, and everyone, I swear, seems I never get your kick quite right. I was walking slow to.
Before we get out of here this week, I've got some comments from singer-songwriter Jessica Lee Mayfield. You know, she's currently pretty busy in the studio, but Jessica was able to take a couple of minutes away to record some thoughts about Elliott Smith.
When I meet other Elliott Smith fans, there is this sense of sharing something cherished and special. His words mean so much to everyone who hears them. The production of his records have this way of making me forget I'm even listening to music at all. which is hard for me a lot of times. It's the way that he was able to paint his emotions into the songs so well. And I think that's why Elliott Smith fans are so diverse and different, too, as everyone has emotions and feelings, and hearing him share his feelings makes us as fans feel better, I think. When I meet other Elliott Smith fans, it's like this sense of shared preciousness, if that makes any sense at all.
Now, there you have it. That's the first edition of Say Yes, an Elliott Smith podcast from Louisville Public Media and The Guest List, produced in conjunction with Kill Rock Stars. Special thanks to Portia Sabin, Stacey Owen, Stephen George, Jeffrey Smith, Andy High, and Margaret Darling. Thanks as well to Kevin Devine, Sadie Dupuy of Speedy Ortiz, and Jessica Lee Mayfield for talking to us this week. Most of all, thanks to Elliott Smith for making all of this possible in the first place with his music. I'm Sean Cannon. You can harangue me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Cannon. You can also subscribe to the guest list at wfpk.org/guestlist. And if you're still listening at this point, well, you know, you should consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes while you're at it, because it really does help.
I got a funny story, though. I lost my virginity listening to Elliott Smith. It was probably something like really depressing, and I probably like felt horrible for a while after. I feel like it was like New Disaster or something like that. Explains a lot.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.